Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording for you in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, the man you've all come to at least tolerate, Mr. John Gentile.
They love me, Adam. They really love me.
Do they?
They love me. I get so many love letters from fans every day of the week. It's great, man. It's great. I got people asking me to marry them, people asking me to move into them, people asking me to engage in secret trysts with them. It's wonderful. It's wonderful being me, Adam. Wonderful.
All right. I'll just have to take your word for it. Also joining us for, I'm going to say, really the first time ever, I think. I don't know if you've been on the show yet. If you have, sorry.
I have. I was on Punk's Point, and I was in the call-in episode.
Oh, okay. So you're on the ones that I don't really pay attention to. So, okay, joining me, staff reviewer Ricky Frankel. Hey, where are you from? I don't know.
I'm originally from Los Angeles, but I'm at school in Roner Park, California, which is about 50 miles out from San Francisco.
Oh, all right. Cool. So, someone on that coast. And John, you want to introduce our guest?
And we've got a super special guest. Someone I'm really pumped to have on the podcast. A very intelligent, a very rocking, a very cultured person who actually, I believe, just became a doctor on the Punk News Podcast. We have with us Joel Tannenbaum of Plow United and ex-friends. Joel, what's happening? What's happening?
How's it going, John? I'm actually a fan of the podcast, so this kind of works both ways, and I'm really glad to be here. So how's it going, everybody?
How's it going?
It sort of unnerves me that someone actually listens to this. And
Adam, if I can address that real quick, I've listened to every single one. It's just become a routine now.
Oh Lord!
So I do enjoy it.
But you have, if you just became a doctor and you're in a band that doesn't suck, that means that you can listen to the Punk News Podcast and not be a complete failure.
There you go.
Yeah.
The jury's still out on that, but good point. Fair enough.
At least one.
Totally.
At least one person can. Like, everyone else might be screwed. All right, so we're just going to jump into this here. John, you have in your head when we're playing songs tonight, so just tell me to shut up when we want to play one, and let's do this then. So I guess the big news this week, or at least the big news up until the release of the other big news, which I guess we'll talk about next week, given that we record these things. The Lawrence Arms have posted a stream of their upcoming Epitaph Records debut, Metropole, which is due out on January 28, 2014. It's their first album since O Calcutta. Epitaph released this as one of those YouTube playlists that kind of conglomerates individual streams of all their songs together. And this is really the first time that kind of people outside of the music reviewer / publicist world have had a chance to actually, you know, listen to this sucker. So lots of feedback on it. Did you guys take a listen? What'd you think, John?
I think Lawrence Arms people are going to be very happy. I think it's kind of a classic Lawrence Arm record. I'm not a huge Lawrence Arm guy. I enjoy them to a certain extent. But I think it's exactly what Lawrence Arm fans are going to be hoping for. And already out the gate, only 22nd day of January, we've got two huge orgcore records. We've got Lawrence Arms and we've got Large Jane Grace / Against Me. So I gotta say, it's looking very good for the org listeners this year.
That's what I was alluding to clumsily when I started this. Is like I was, you know, at the rate we record these, it's always sort of like a week after things happen. And you know, everyone was all about the Lawrence Arms record last week, and everyone's all about the Against Me record this week. This is a pretty good time to be a, you know, stereotypical orgcore fan, I guess. Which I'm not embarrassed to say right now, although I usually hate that word.
Plus, Chuck Reagan's got a record coming out and some more stuff like that later on this year.
Guys, when did orgcore become a word? I was thinking about that the other day.
So, we... I feel that it was two or three years ago when people started using it non-ironically, I guess. And I remember that like we posted like a bunch of, it was the year-end reviews for a few years ago, where there were like three or four year-end reviews where we were all saying that like this whole hardcore thing is bullshit. You guys should stop saying it because it sounds, I don't know, to me, and I'm I've softened on this, but my big worry about it was that it implies like a certain amount of like insularity, and like it takes, you know, something that we should have like all kinds of sounds that we're listening to, and it really puts it into a box. So I was really resisting having Punk News, you know, officially endorse that as a thing. But I don't know. Now I'm just going to give it up to the wisdom of crowds, I guess. If people want to say it, then that's fine. I'm cool with it. But I don't know where it came from. I do own the domain, which I stole from a German company, but that's about it.
Cool.
What was the German company using it for?
I don't know. It was all registered in German, and they let it expire. And I had this thing in my calendar that said, "Hey, check OrgCore because it might expire."
I'd be willing to bet that it was a filthy German sex site. I mean, that's the only thing OrgCore.com can be, right?
Let's see here. Okay. Okay, so OrgCore is in Urban Dictionary. There's an article in the Phoenix New Times called "What is OrgCore Punk?" Okay. It's in WikiHow. Oh, weird. This thing has a life. That's
I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine and see what OrgCore comes up when it was German. You guys chat among yourselves.
I believe it was German.
Adam, is it orgcore.com? Is that what you're saying you have?
Yeah. Orgcore.org seemed a little bit too crazy to me.
This yeah, don't mind us, listeners. Yeah.
This is the part of the show we look things up on the internet.
Well, I just learned last week that there's, I guess, an unofficial site called Org Summit. Am I the last person to find out about this?
Yeah.
Like the very last?
I think there's like maybe three children in Sri Lanka that don't know about it, and that's about it. Yeah, Org Summit is like the common, like people go to comment about Punk News related stuff there, but
it's unofficial. We don't control it or run it or anything like that.
Right.
Everyone that kind of runs Punk News just kind of pretends it doesn't exist, and that, you know, then we don't have to look at it and have anxiety or anything like that. I don't know. OrgCore showed up in the Urban Dictionary in 2009, so it's been around for a few years. Anyways, Lawrence Arms, any thoughts on this thing, Ricky, Joel?
I was really excited that they dressed up as Insane Clown Posse in the video. I don't know if, at least I think that's what it was supposed to be.
I think it was. I was super excited by that, too.
And then, yeah, I don't know. I mean, those guys, they set the bar really high lyrically. Like, that's kind of what they're all about, and their record, you know, keeps doing that, in my opinion.
You know, I mean, the them dressing up as Insane Clown Posse, I was going to say ICP, but using the abbreviation feels weird to me, so I'm not going to do that. But
it implies a level of dedication.
Yeah, it implies too much familiarity. I don't have that, so I'm not going to go there. I'm surprised how much of like this band's image is kind of like goofy and jokey, but it's like a complete contrast to the actual sound usually that's on the record. Like, that song is not a funny song to me, and But the video is, you know, they're goofing around like that. And
yeah,
and like you compare, like, you know, how like Brendan's internet persona with then like just like how this record sounds, like completely divorced from that. And it's like night and day to me. So that's, I don't know. I think that's really neat.
Cool.
All right. John, do you have any answers to our super boring question that we're trying to find out?
Yeah. Let me tell you, Adam, you don't want to be creeping around OrgCore.com. Back in 2005, 2004, just stay out. Stay out. Not a thing you want to see. Not a thing you're going to be talking about to grandma about on Sunday afternoon dinner, let me tell you.
Oh, do we God. All have viruses now?
yeah, you might. You might.
All right. Completely different topic now. So Discord Records is going to be releasing the demo from Henry Rollins' first band, SOA, on March 11th, 2014. Rollins joined Black Flag the next year, of course, in 1981. The release collects eight songs that were recorded with Skip Groff at Inner Ear Studio in December of 1980 during their first ever recording session. Two of the songs, Disease and Stepping Stone Party, were originally released on the Flex Your Head sampler, and Gonna Have to Fight was included on the band's No Policy EP. So there's seven songs on this thing. You can find the track list and the cover art on Punk News right now. John, this seems like something you'd have something to say about.
Yeah, I got a lot to say about this, actually. I think, actually, most of these songs were on the No Policy EP. The No Policy EP, it's pretty good, but it's not like a long-lost punk class. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like it was never long-lost. But, I mean, the SOA EP is historically a document. It's interesting enough. It's good enough. It's almost like, I mean, it's sort of like Henry Rollins doing Minor Threat kind of songs. What's interesting is Henry Rollins has dissed SOA quite a bit on his radio show. He always talked about how they were bad songs played poorly, which, I mean, anymore with Rollins, I'm getting kind of played out on the dude because it's like, I feel as though even though he's over 50, he's still trying to make an image for himself. It's like, I know back in, I think it was the Get in the Van book, he was talking about how he used to love to listen to Madonna. And then people ask him, well, do you like Lady Gaga? And he's like, I don't care about Lady Gaga at all. I don't listen to any of that kind of music. I don't care about your mainstream music world. But he used to brag about how he used to listen to Madonna, you know? So I have a hard time taking anything that he says at face value anymore because he's so contradictory. And I don't know if that's on plan or what. In some ways, I feel like Henry Rollins is still the 14-year-old little boy that he always talks about that he evolved from. You know what I'm saying? With these tunes, you know, I like SOA. This will be cool. I'll be picking this up just because I'm a completist. I would recommend if people want to check out SOA, you should probably get the Discord Records. It's like the first 6 inches compilation or whatever. It's got like 6, 7 inches. Well, I say the first 6 inches. It should be the first 7 inches. The six first 7 inches or whatever comp, which is, it's got Minor Threat on it. It's got SOA. It's got Government Issue. Got a couple other cool bands on it. So this is cool. This is not going to blow anybody's mind. But I'm glad we live in a world where this rare music can resurface and get a proper issue and people can check it out and enjoy it. Oh, I also would like to point out that I really like in the picture, in the cover of this album, Henry Rollins is dressed exactly like Darby Crash. He's got the handkerchief on his wrist, he's got the black tank top on and the black close cut hair. That's like Darby Crash right there, except this is totally not Darby Crash kind of music.
I'm gonna let that sit to see who can pick up on your Darby Crash fashion thing. I don't know where you have to go with that. I'm just gonna leave it then. 8 songs by Dave Grohl's pre-Nirvana band Drain Bramage have been uncovered. Antiquiet has unearthed the rare set of 8 songs from Drain Bramage, an early band from Dave Grohl, Nirvana, Scream, and the Foo Fighters that also field Rudin Radding and Dave Smith. The band formed in 1985, and they were together for 2 years before splitting. Grohl left to join Scream at the time. The songs that are on these recordings were put together by the band at the Laundry Room Studios in 1986 and have been dubbed the Laundry Room Demos. You can find all the songs for download at the Antiquiet website. The link is on Punk News if you look up Drain Bramage. So there you go. I was really trying not to say that the wrong way, and I did. So, yeah. You guys heard this yet?
No, and is it Drain Bramage or Dane Bramage?
It is Dane Bramage. See, I can't even say it right this time. So, yeah, band shouldn't do that. It's confusing to me.
No, I think it was actually the name that put me off of it. I was like, I don't know, guys. That's a pretty 13-year-old name. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's amazing.
They have huge hair in the picture. If you look at the picture of them from 1985, that was my first thing that struck me. It was like, wow. People had really big hair in the 80s. So that's my entire impression of this.
Yeah, how do you get that? It seems like that people can't get that body in their hair anymore. Like, are all these guys using tons of product? Because, I mean, I've sort of tried to grow my hair again, and it never looks as cool as these guys. Maybe I'm just not that cool. Like, maybe you have to be cool to have cool hair. Like, Joel, do you have cool hair? Like, you're a cool guy, so is your hair, like, really cool and big?
My hair is really short, and what I was going to say is that I think the EPA probably clamped down on whatever they used to put in Aquanet in the 80s. I think there's, like, something that was in hair products, like aerosol hair products in the 80s that probably doesn't exist anymore. So I think that's where you're running into problems.
I got to tell you, I'm kind of done with, like, Dave Grohl in general, so I might skip this. I just... After watching Sound City, I just at the second half of Sound City, I just found him really self-indulgent, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. So I might skip this. If I can I comment on the Lawrence Arms album real quick?
Yeah.
I loved it. I was expecting it to be a little bit more aggressive like O Calcutta, but I was pleasantly surprised with all the songs. So I'm excited to see them on February 18th.
You got to jump in here.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm getting a feel for it.
Listen, Ricky, this ain't a conversation. The Punk News Podcast is a brawl. If you got something to say, you just got to get in there and be like, shut up, John, you're a douche. You have no idea what you're talking about. Like Adam and I usually talk to each other.
Okay.
Sure, but we're being very nice right now. You want a story or you want to do a song?
Let's play a song. Joel, what do you got for us? You guys jump in. Listen, Joel, you got to be like, listen, guys, we need to be talking about X-Friends, my brand new band. Joel, tell me, what was it like opening for Andrew W.K. and Marky Ramone doing Ramone's tunes? Was that a once-in-a-lifetime event or what?
A lot happened that night, and some of it was pretty cool, and some of it was pretty strange. I will say this, Andrew W.K. like knew exactly what to do with those songs. Like, he's clearly a smart guy. You got to give him credit. Like, he knew exactly how to deliver those songs where it like wasn't trying to imitate Joey Ramone, but also wasn't trying to tack weird stuff on top of it. It was pretty solid. The crowd was weird, like, especially as you got deeper into the Andrew W.K. part of the night. Hanging out backstage was a little weird, but it was fun. It was fun. It was a good night.
That's the thing in punk rock now. See, whenever people love to say something was weird. Like let's say I hear, I don't know, a Crass album that I don't – well, Crass is a bad example. Let's say I hear a Clash song that I don't like. I'll be like, yeah, that was a little weird. What do you mean by weird, Joel? Give us the specifics. We need to know the inside dirt from the music industry.
Some people got a little too excited during the Ramones part of the evening in the audience, and it kind of spilled out into the rest of the venue.
Yeah, I was actually – there was like three fights. Like it was – you know, I mean, honestly, like back in the day, like back in, you know, like late 80s, early 90s, and actually even the late 90s, if you went to like heavier or harder music, there was almost always a fight. We're going to be talking about Slayer later on in the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And there was always fights in Slayer, but I went to Slayer not too long ago, and there was like no fights. But like for some reason, this show was like old school enough, there was lots of fist fights.
It was like City Gardens or something in 1994. Yeah, I definitely agree with you about that. But you know, the paddy wagon, you know, did pull up out front, and you know, one of our friends definitely almost ended up in it. So I guess that's when I say weird, I guess I mean that.
Oh, your friend was one of the people brawling.
Yeah, I can't say anything else, man. I've already said too much.
Well, you know what they say, snitches get stitches. Yeah. So Joel, tell us, what tune should we play from X-Friends, and is there a background behind it?
I'm going to ask, I guess, a song called Sympathy for the Sociopath. It's the third song on the record. And I'm just really because we just made a video for it. And I think Paper and Plastic's going to put it up on the internet next week. I don't know. I think it's a pretty good song. I guess it's about what happens to high school bullies when they grow up, which is that they go on to run the world and run for office. That's pretty much what the song's about. So how's that?
Sounds kicking, and I agree with your thesis. This is X-Friends.
Sociopath, biting his cheeks, trying not to laugh. Blood fills his mouth with the taste of salt. Nobody cares, but it hurts a lot. When it's a lie, it hurts a lot. Sympathy for the creditor, corner office on the highest floor. Cops crack skulls, all right. Cops crack skulls, cops crack skulls.
That was cool. So we are going to keep going with the stories here because we just have a packed slate of things that John has assembled for us to talk about. So, John, I got to imagine that this next one is for you specifically.
Can I? By all means, continue, my good fellow.
Okay, so because you have assembled this, we have something about Slayer. So I guess we got to do that. Where the hell is the story here? I'm losing it.
Slayer's Suicidal Tendencies and Exodus are going on a tour together in May. It's going to be mostly the Midwest or so, Colorado, Utah, Missouri, Wisconsin, Ohio. And it's just going to be about a week's worth of shows. It's notable because it's Slayer and Exodus, and right now Gary Holt of Exodus is now in Slayer, and he filled in for Jeff Hanneman, who passed away. But Gary Holt's been playing for Slayer for the past 2 years. And actually, I got to say, I'm feeling kind of bad. I'm feeling kind of like a negative Nancy this podcast. But I mean, honestly, if this was 99, 98, I'd be like, yes, Slayer, Exodus together. It's going to be awesome. But I've seen Slayer 7 times, but until about a month ago, I hadn't seen it for like 6 years. And my pal Matt and I, who are both big Slayer fans, were like, yeah, man, let's go see Slayer. It's definitely time. It was called the Slayer Old School Classics Night, where they were basically doing like all old songs, like 1990 and prior, which is like their golden era. And we went, and it was kind of a bummer, because I hate to fault a band for getting old, but some bands age. I mean, the Stooges are still amazing, and they're older than Slayer. Slayer was looking kind of old, but worse than that, it was basically just the set list from Decade of Aggression, and Tom Araya even did, like, the same stage banter from Decade of Aggression from, like, 1990. Like, it was almost like he was reading a script, and it was just, unfortunately, I don't go to that many disappointing concerts, but it was kind of a disappointment.
Why are Suicidal Tendencies opening for them?
I'll tell you why, because Suicidal Tendencies have always had a thrash connection because, you know, Slayer's from L.A., Metallica's from San Francisco, but they have connections to L.A., Exodus is from L.A., and Suicidal Tendencies used to hang out with all those thrash guys back in the day, 88, 89. Suicidal Tendencies actually were an influence on bands like Slayer, and then Suicidal Tendencies became like a thrash band, and what's his name from Suicidal Tendencies joined Metallica, Robert Trujillo.
I'll second that, man. I learned about Suicidal Tendencies before I ever got into punk, before I ever heard the Misfits, by like reading Rip magazine when they were covering bands like Exodus and Anthrax. Like, I definitely got into Suicidal Tendencies through metal, and I think a lot of people did.
Oh, wait, aren't Suicidal Tendencies from like Venice Beach also?
Yeah,
in California. So
totally.
Okay, I see the connection now.
Do you guys think, like, and then I'll talk about this, and you guys can mention this too, is, like, and I'm not saying that's a good thing, but back in 98, 99, 2000, if you went to see Slayer, it actually, to this day, Slayer is the most insane concert I've been to. So incredibly jam-packed, a lot of drunk people, a lot of rednecks getting really, really, really wasted, having a great time, and brawling. I mean, people are going to think I'm exaggerating, but it was not unusual to see, like, five completely separate fistfights at a Slayer concert. And now when I went, and not that it's a bad thing, but it was like at like the people were as excitable as going to see, like, you know, the Eagles, the band that is, you know. So I mean, why do you guys think there's like fewer fights and people just aren't as rowdy at shows anymore? It's just because that mentality has subsided to a more calm European mentality, if I may.
Well, speaking of insane clown posse, I think that energy is probably happening somewhere else. Like, I think that show is happening. It's just not happening at, like, the bands that we're going to see.
You know, well,
the Slayer shows would be full of, like, old people that are too old to fight, right? So,
well, maybe that's like 10 years ago, you're right. Like, now they're, like, 45, but when you're 35, you can still brawl and get up in the next morning. But when you're 45, that next morning hurts pretty bad, you know? Ricky, what were you going to say? You used to brawl on Slayer? Like, you used to, like, go to Slayer and look for fights?
Well, I mean, this kind of sounds like the Cannibal Corpse concert I went to about a year ago. And I'm not kidding. Some girl had the gnarliest black eye after the concert I had ever seen. So I think maybe everyone's going to Cannibal Corpse now. And also, there are a ton of rednecks. I was majorly uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, you know, I use that term too. Is it rude to say redneck? Because I used to not think of I actually used to think of redneck as almost like a complimentary term, and that, you know, it's someone that blue collar that works really hard, that you know gets you know that works really hard and does labor that I guess people us fancy pantses on the East and West Coast don't do. But it seems to have affixed to itself a purely negative connotation. So is there? I mean, I guess white trash is like a better term.
I think that's a better term. I mean, like the. I mean, I saw someone. I remember this like vividly. Someone was wearing a NASCAR shirt and a Pabst Blue Ribbon and trucker hat, and I'm like, okay, you're the quintessential redneck right now.
You should have tried to fight him.
No, because I would definitely have got my ass kicked. I was not ready for that Cannibal Corpse show at all.
I saw something on the net the other day where they called someone a bumpkin. And
whoa.
you country like, bumpkin?
No, not country, just bumpkin, right? Bumpkin. And I was like, oh my god, I want to use that all the time now.
Was country implied, or are there like different kinds of bumpkins?
No, country was implied, right? But leaving it out for some reason just made it more biting to me.
Is there such a thing as a city bumpkin or a suburban bumpkin? It's like, well, Mao, look at all them lots. You know, we ain't got people to pump our gas. Where it come from? Oh, you must be from Ohio. Nah, we're from Manhattan. We live on 91st and Lexington. You city bumpkins.
Well, anyways, if you want to go to this Slayer tour, it starts on May 9th. The first date's in Magna, Utah, and it runs through the 17th. It ends in Columbus, Ohio, at the Rock on the Range Festival. So there you go.
How is this not coming to Delaware, by the way? That's the first thing I thought of when I looked at the dates. That is inexcusable that this tour is not going to happen in Delaware. Their entire rock clubs in Delaware built specifically for these tours.
You should have come to Slayer last month at the E Center.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking more like Cinderella at the Big Kahuna nightclub in Wilmington.
Y&T.
Yeah. Bang Tango. They actually play like twice a year in Delaware. Anyway. Didn't mean to take it there.
All right. Moving on now. So it's been more than 9 months since the absence of Greg Hetson at recent, at 9 months ago, Bad Religion shows was noticed. And the band has now officially unveiled that Mike Dimkich of The Cult is a new guitarist for them. This still means they have three guitarists, but two on a good day. So the change was revealed when the Download Festival posted a photo of the band's touring lineup and Hetson was conspicuously absent. Afterwards, Dimkich confirmed that it was him. He tweeted about it. So there you go. Greg Hetson is out. Mike Dimkich is in. And when you go to see them, Brett Gerwitz probably won't be there because that's how that works.
Did they say why he left?
I don't know, and I haven't seen anything about why he left.
You guys got to be on the gossip train like I do.
I'm
not talking out of school here. You guys, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Greg Hetson, and this was – oh, here we go. This was on TMZ. So this is what TMZ said. Basically what happened was Greg – if you remember, Bad Religion issued like this really ambiguous statement, and they were like, when Greg gets his life back together, he can like play with us again. Like something real ambiguous. And but that usually suggests drugs or something else like that. But what happened was earlier this year, TMZ reported that Hetson had obtained a temporary restraining order against his wife. No, I'm sorry. She got it against him, accusing him of violence. But he said – then he got his own restraining order against her, saying that she beat him with a coat hanger and shoved an apple core into his mouth. So it seems like he's having some – and that's TMZ, not from Punk News. Could be wrong. Who knows? But
TMZ writes about – the comings and goings of Greg Hetson.
I think they read about the comings and goings of domestic abuse. Like, if you want to get famous, like, domestic abuse is how you can get on TMZ. And so, I guess he's gone through some kind of thing. But however, so you would think, like, somebody in that situation, their life would be out of control. But just around that time, too, like, Off tweeted a picture of Off and Greg Hetson, like, hanging out, having a good time. So who knows? But anyway, you can take whatever you want from that. I know what I'm taking from that whole thing, and that's why I think he's not in the band anymore.
Now, our commenters pointed out that Dimkich also played with them when they were on Conan back in December. So he's definitely been playing with the band for a while. So I guess we're now considering him an official member. Is it weird that he was a member of the cult? That does not seem like fertile bad religion guitar player breeding ground to me. But maybe I don't know enough about the cult.
I thought so. I thought it was weird. I saw the cult live after Against Me opened for them, and
that's a weird ticket. Against
it
Me
was
the cult.
So it was so weird because the not only just for the bands, but also. It seemed like there were more Against Me fans that wanted more Against Me than the cult than cult fans. But I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the cult when I saw them.
So, yeah.
The cult actually, I mean, like, I think this guy's kind of just hired as, like, almost like a session musician. Like, he's competent at doing what he does. But the cult actually has sort of a hip pedigree. Before they were the cult, they were Death Cult. And before that, they were Southern Death Cult.
Yeah.
And so they used to be, like an actual, like, goth band, sort of like Bauhaus. And so, like they're sort of like halfway between Bauhaus and Jane's Addiction, if you ask me. And then they sort of morphed into just, like, a pop rock band. And I think Rick Rubin is the guy that made the cult, basically.
I've been trying to lay out on this one because I realized all I've talked about so far is 80s metal. But
that's why we brought you on.
Thank you. I am from Brookhaven. But they don't you think this is maybe just all people hanging out in L.A.? Yeah. Isn't that probably how this happens? Like this probably got decided at the Viper Room, I'm guessing.
Sounds like it could have been.
Right.
I mean, I'm surprised they even need to bring in, like, a third guitar player. Can you really hear – like, Joel, you're in a band. Can you – like, can the audience really tell the difference between two and three guitar players on stage?
Well, the places those guys are playing, yeah. I mean, like, a basement in West Philly, not so much. It's really just a question of how deaf you are. But, I mean, yeah, these guys, you know, they have access to pretty good front-of-house sound. So
well, and you got – yeah, and you got to remember too that I mean, Gurwitz doesn't play with them unless they're in L.A. So they'd really be down to one guitar player, which would make a big difference with the kind of stuff that they're playing.
I mean, it's a big deal that they cut him in because assuming he's technically part of the band, that would mean he probably gets like a fair share of the beat, if you will, as opposed to like a per diem, which would make a big difference in a band like Bad Religion.
Although, I mean, we're kind of cobbled this entire story together based on a bunch of tweets, so I don't know how legally binding it necessarily is.
He like sees Bad Religion. See, the tweets say I'm part of the band. You have to pay me.
Punk News confirmed it. Okay, John, you got to get your ranting about things pipes tuned, because here we go. So, the Vivian Girls have officially called it quits. Earlier today, they posted on their Facebook. They said, "Brooklyn, New York, March 2007. We started making music together and became what we know as the Vivian Girls. It's been a long and crazy journey in the 7 years since, and we feel as though time has finally come and let our band rest in peace." So although the band last released Share the Joy in 2011, since then they've been fairly inactive with guitarist Cassie Ramone playing in The Babies and bassist Katie Goodman. Bassist Katie Goodman fronting with Sarah. I can't even talk tonight. All is not lost, though. They'll be playing two final shows, one on February 14th in LA, one on March 1st at Brooklyn's Death by Audio. Both those shows are all ages. So you can perpetually have the Vivian Girls reform at your whim with their very own home computer game, which you can find a link to on the Punk News and is pretty cool. So, I was a fan of this band, particularly their first record. John, you are a huge fan of this band.
No! Why? I saw this band live. I mean, honestly, this band never really toured that much. Vivian Girls is phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. Very unique band. They blend together kind of Ramones-ish with doo-wop stuff, with girl group stuff, with kind of like no-wave sound. And they're a phenomenal band. And all three records are different. I love the third one the most, Share the Joy. I saw them live twice, and they are just so great live. But, I mean, it's not that bad that they're breaking up. I mean, I would have liked to see them continue along with the other bands. But LaSera, I just saw LaSera. LaSera is so good. I'm thinking the third record is going to be Katie Goodman's best to date. I'm a huge LaSera fan, and the Babies are so good. With Cassie Ramone and Kevin Morby of Woods. What's cool about LaSera and Babies is it's each sort of like those young ladies' contributions to the band separated, and they're both really, really good. Cassie Ramone says she's going to do solo stuff. She's got a couple of 7-inches. They're cool. But I mean, I'm bummed out, but I'm not that bummed out because they're both still making music. And so, I mean, it'll be cool to see those bands. What's interesting about the Vivian Girls is I think they were probably the biggest example, and maybe one of the earliest examples of a band that got tons and tons and tons of blog hype. Certain websites really built them up, and then those same websites tore them down for the same exact things they built them up for. Like on the first record, they praised Cassie Ramone's voice and the way they sounded, and on the second and third, they're like, "Well, you know, we've ingested this band too much ourselves, so we're sick of them only because we ate too much of them or listened to too much of them. So now we're just gonna just blast on them." And they were vicious. And I gotta say, I hope I'm not seeing myself as too big of an internet influence, but I specifically remember for a while, poor Cassie Ramone was just getting so much hate about her vocals, and her vocals are just fine. I think her vocals are great, actually, very unique. And so in one of my reviews, I basically put some of these websites on blast about their attacks on her vocal style. And I will say, the internet will back me up, is those attacks really did taper off after my piece. So I don't know if I had a piece in that or not, but sometimes just music critics are so mean. Mean. I mean, being a critic isn't a license to be mean. Being a critic is a license to say what you think of a record. You don't need to be spiteful in it. But anyway, they actually announced a third last show March 2nd. I was bummed because my pal was getting married March 1st, so I couldn't go. And I vowed I would never go back to Brooklyn again. But they're doing a second show on March 2nd, so I'm definitely going to go to that. And honestly, I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. When I go to these kind of shows, not that I care about fitting in, but... Like, when this is, I find this to be very interesting. When you're the type of person that isn't generally at a certain type of show, people treat you very differently, which is always amusing to me and weird. Well, not weird, but amusing and says something about human nature. So if you're there, come give me a daps. March 2nd, I forget where, Brooklyn, I'll be there. Ricky or Joel, you guys like this band? Are you guys sad they're breaking up? Or are you guys glad they're breaking up? Would you like to write a spiteful diatribe about the band itself?
I haven't listened to them in so long. I don't even really feel I don't even really feel qualified to have an opinion about it. But it is weird. It's definitely like live by pitchfork, die by pitchfork. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's not the only band that happened to.
And the worst part is, like, with some of these websites, after they give them a beating, they go back to them. Joel, what's your opinion of that? Like, let's say, like, a website, like, let's say Pung says, Plow United is great, we love Plow United, and then you guys put out an X-Friends, and I give you a one-star review, and I just do a 2,000-word about how much I hate you, and then... I contact, like, Punk News contacts you a year later and says, Joel, we want to do an interview with you. Would you do it? Or would you say, no, you guys burned us before. We're not going to give you the boon of our existence or whatever, or our presence.
Honestly, and I think you can look at Twitter if you don't believe me on this, I honestly distinguish between well-written bad reviews and badly written bad reviews. And I feel like if the writer, and this has happened a couple of times, not with websites that anybody reads or cares about, but when somebody like just eviscerates something that I did, if they like made an argument and executed the argument reasonably well, I'm like, all right, that's cool, man. Difference of opinion. But oftentimes that's not the case. Oftentimes it's just jibber jabber. So the answer to your question would be, it would depend on how well written the review was. If the review was well written, I'd be like, all right, respect. If it wasn't, I'd just be like, no, you're dumb. I'm going to watch TV. So that's my answer.
I never really listened to them, but I am interested now. Should I just go in order of when their albums came out, or which one do you think is the best?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think most Vivian Girls fans would disagree with me, but I think their third album, Share the Joy, is the best. It's the most varied one. The first one kind of is only the first one like 14 minutes long. I think it's just called Vivian Girls, and it's basically variations on a theme. The songs are very short and really, really good. And they all sort of have a similar sound, where Share the Joy has some songs like that, but it's got some more... you know, I would say check out Share the Joy. I think that's the best. Share the Joy.
Okay. Also, I mean, it looks like they're breaking up on good... The band's breaking up on good terms, at least.
Yeah, just yeah.
From the little blurb they gave.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's a case of the band. I mean, the band has essentially been inactive for like 3 years now, and so I would guess, I don't know it all, but I would guess is like one of the girls was like, well, you know, why don't we just end it instead of, like, so we can really focus on our own stuff? And then so they just said, yeah, let's just end it. So, but I could be wrong. I mean, the Vivian girls are essentially just, well, I mean, Cassie Ramone is, like the leader, but also Katie Goodman is an essential part, too. And they're really the only two permanent members. And so they might just be like, you know, let's just end it. And, you know, maybe there'll be a reunion in, like, a few years.
Yeah, that that looks like it. What could happen, at least from the blurb.
Anyway, very true. Adam, I think we should blast out another tune. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we should. What do you want to do?
We're gonna blast out a tune from a band that has long since broken up, but evolved into Mischief Brew, one of my favorite personal bands, The Orphans. The Orphans were a punk rock band from Westchester. They were sort of, like, even though they were around from, like, 96, I think, they always sounded a little bit more old school to me. Their album has been out of print for a while, but it just got put back up online at the Mischief Brew Bandcamp. I think it's mischiefbrew.bandcamp.com. And that band is special for tonight's program because I believe Plow United used to play with The Orphans, right, Joel?
Absolutely. They were a couple years younger than us. We played with them a lot, especially in like 95, 96. And it's been really neat watching Eric's thing kind of evolve since then. They actually, the first time Plow played at the church since we got back together, they Orphans got back together, especially for that show. It was really great.
Do you have any memories from back in 96, particularly in Westchester or Havertown, of Orphans Plow United shows?
Not specifically. It's been a long time and there were so many of them and they all run together. But I will say this, Eric and I both played our first acoustic show together in 1998. I think right after Plow broke up and I think a little bit after the Orphans had broken up. It was at a warehouse in North Philly at 5th and Cecil B. Moore. It was some crazy thing that would probably end in like the SWAT team being called if they tried to do it in 2014. But yeah, Eric played acoustically and I played acoustically and he was playing like Billy Bragg covers and I can't even remember what I was doing. And I walked away from that night being like, well, that sucks. I'm never playing acoustically again. And Eric stuck with it and that kind of evolved into Mischief Brew, which is awesome.
Well, fans, so this is Mischief Brew for their Mischief Brew. This is one of my favorite Orphans tunes, the hilariously titled, the classic, The Government Stole My Germs CD by The Orphans.
The government stole my germs today. The government stole my germs today. The government stole my germs today. The government stole my germs today.
Okay, and we're back. We have a few more stories that we're going to get through before we wrap up this this train wreck here. So, first of all, Bruce Springsteen and Jesse Malin, ex-Degeneration, if you remember that band, have they performed a cover of the Ramones' Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio together at the Light of Day benefit show in Asbury Park, New Jersey, earlier this month, a few weekends ago. So there's video of this that you can check out, and you can find the link on Punk News. Any thoughts on this, guys?
I'm not really a huge Springsteen guy. Never really have been, but I don't know. It's kind of cool to see him do a Ramones cover, though.
John, this seems like it would be up your alley. I don't know why.
Honestly, I'm not a huge Bruce fan. I've been trying to get into Bruce for the past 3 years, and it's just not clicking, man. I like Rosalita, but that's kind of like the only Bruce song that I like. I think it's interesting that Bruce often gives props to the punk rockers, because Bruce actually predates the punk rockers by about 3 or 4 years. If you remember, I think it was his 2007 or 2008 tour, he used to open up with London Calling by The Clash. I think it's sort of fair to say that Bruce Springsteen is sort of an American Joe Strummer, or Joe Strummer is sort of a British Springsteen. I think there's a similarity of themes there. And it's cool that he's paying tribute to the Ramones. I know Bruce Springsteen's got a Patti Smith connection. So this is cool. Let me frame it this way. If you're a fan of Bruce Springsteen does a lot of cool stuff that hardcore fans will appreciate. And he's very talented at that. So if I was a fan, like for example, if the Melvins came out and did Rock and Roll Radio, I would go crazy. Whereas to somebody else, that would not be a big deal. So if you're a Bruce fan and he does this, this is a cool thing for fans to enjoy.
I got to say that like them having the horns with them as they're doing this was really like the only way to kind of adequately reproduce that like Phil Spector wall of sound thing that happened during the like the studio recording of this. So that was kind of neat to see, because I don't know, I guess I wasn't expecting it. I'm always surprised when I see Jesse Malin anywhere. And it's only because I have no connection at all with his like post Degeneration career, except that I know it exists. So I got to imagine that he's doing pretty well for himself if he's, you know, sharing the stage with Springsteen. What am I not aware of here? How big is Malin's solo stuff?
I don't think he's that big.
Yeah, I don't
is he just
so
well
either.
Connected? Does he know everyone? Like,
you know, Todd Youth was in Degeneration. I didn't know that. Sorry to throw us off topic. Yeah, I guess. I think I would guess like that he's like one of these guys that like helps a lot of other bands record and write stuff, and like, you know, sometimes maybe labels bring him in to ghost write stuff for some bands, and so like musicians know him but nobody else does, you know.
Yeah, and I mean like he's always seemed to be, you know, kind of tangentially related to like a lot of the Ramones family of stuff. Like there's that he always crops up in like Ramones stories as we're that we've done in the past on Punk News. And it's, I don't know, it's always curious to me, like, is he someone that, like, you know, resonates with, like, a certain segment of the listening audience that we just don't normally talk about, or, I don't know. You guys probably don't have an answer to this, but just that's what I think every time I see Jesse Malin. I'm always just like, huh, all right.
Oh, you know, actually, I just looked this up. This cover is fitting because in 2008, he put out a covers album called On Your Sleeve, and he covered the Ramones' Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio?
Oh, okay. There you go.
Oh.
I'm just like going through the Punk News archives here. So, okay, so Jesse Malin performing on Conan O'Brien in 2004. So, I don't know. I have no idea when his career kind of starts and ends and ebbs and flows. But, anyways, someone tell us.
Didn't he have some connection to Coney Island High when that was like a big venue in New York? Is that possible? Is that relevant? It's probably not.
I don't know.
Like he was like a part owner or something. I don't know. New York mysteries.
The internet will tell us. I think so. Wait. I don't know. I'm not going to look up things on the internet and read my search results. Because we already did that on the show. Okay, next story here. Taking Back Sunday has released a studio version of it. We're talking about Taking Back Sunday?
You can skip it.
I hate this band.
Well, I started. Anyway.
So much.
Taking Back Sunday has released a studio version of their song, Flicker Fade. The band has been teasing the song during their live shows for a few months, but this marks the first new studio recording released by the band for their upcoming sixth studio album. The record is titled Happiness Is, and it's due out on March 18th of this year. It's the band's first album since 2011's self-titled effort. Okay, so I think I'm out on this one. Joel's out on this one. John, you're out. Ricky?
I hate this band, and it's a shitty name.
Okay. Hey,
I hate this band so much, Adam.
No one has anything to say about Taking Back Sunday.
Fred Mascherino was in this band when it started, right? I think, maybe.
No one actually knows anything about Taking Back Sunday.
And also, that is an awful album name.
I got nothing.
Oh, I could rant, but I'm not going to.
Go ahead.
That's good radio, man.
No, I mean, I just, all the people I did not like in high school liked this band, and it just, God, and then just the whining vocals, it just drove me insane. So I stay away from this band as much as I can.
I think, like, a lot of us on Punk News kind of have, like, a weird relationship with this kind of whole era of music, because when all of this stuff started to come out, and all of these kind of, like, I'm going to say, like, in a really mean way, like, all that, like, mall screamo stuff that Victory and all them were releasing in, like, the early 2000s, like, most of us that were running Punk News had kind of come up with, like, you know, like, Epitaph and Fat and No Idea stuff in the mid to late 90s. So it was after us. We were already too old for it when it blew up. And some of us really tried. I mean, like Scott, who writes for Alt Press now, who was, you know, helping run Punk News with Aubin and myself, he really tried to, like, give these bands a time of day, and I got to give him credit for it, because he was way more accommodating than I think we were, because we were just completely disinterested. But it seems odd to me hearing them crop up now, because, like, their spotlight has since moved to, I don't know, whatever kids listen to these days. So
falling in reverse,
I guess. So it's like,
speaking of Epitaph,
like, to me,
I'd be shitting on rappers like I'm wearing Pampers.
God, word. That was awful. Word. Oh my God. Oh no. I mean, I remember when this band started getting big, cause I was in school and stuff like that. And oh my God, I just was listening to this, and I'm like, I couldn't believe, like, everyone was so enthralled with this band. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys listened to the song on this article, but oh my, I couldn't get through it.
We did. We don't actually do the prep for the show.
I know that for next time now.
Yeah. I literally got home like half an hour ago. So
I mean, Taking Back Sunday is a huge band. I mean, honestly, Taking Back Sunday is a bigger band than every single band that we've talked about on this podcast so far, except for Bruce and Plow United.
I know, and that's what is, it's always so weird to me.
And the
Orphans. To me, there's still this band that is like some weird upstart band that the kids listen to that I'm never going to get. But on the other hand, they have a career, and this is their sixth record.
1.4 million likes on Facebook, which I always use as, like, a thumb. You know, like, Taking Back Sunday has 1.4 million likes on Facebook. Joel and Ricky, how many likes do you think the Lawrence Arms have?
Oh, I would say in the hundred. Oh God, what is it like? I'd say, like, maybe, I'll say 60,000, 65,000.
Joel, what do you think?
I'm no Facebookologist, but that sounds about right. Like, more than 50,000 and less than a million, somewhere in there.
35,000. So as huge, I mean, Lawrence Arms is huge in Punk News, right? So as huge as Lawrence Arms is, Taking Back Sunday is 15 times bigger than Lawrence Arms.
What label is Say Anything on?
Say Anything.
Are they?
Oh, I don't know.
Let me see.
So, I mean, it just goes, I mean, the point is it just goes to show that as big as people think punk rock bands are, and as much as people often will attack a band for, you know, being too big for their britches or selling out or whatever, they ain't nothing compared to the big bands. So cut the big bands some slack. Cut X-Friends some slack. when you see X-Friends pull up in the big bus, you know, with the chrome wheels, the double deckers, cut them some slack. They're just earning a decent living like everybody else.
Thanks, John.
You got it, Joel.
Like, I'll cut them. Oh, they're on Warner. Oh, okay. No, I'll cut like big band slack if they just make good music that I just don't want to, like, you know, just like want to shoot myself to, you know. Like, I just, oh my god, this band. Okay.
Well, here's a band that can't possibly piss you off. The Exploited.
Punk's have not signed dead.
To Nuclear Blast. Nuclear Blast has announced the signing of the British punk legends, The Exploited. The band, who formed originally in 1980 in East Kilbride, Scotland. Yeah, that was right. Okay. Every time I pronounce anything, I've got to double check it. Are working on a new album for a late 2014 release. Founder Wadi Buchan said this. He said, "At last, after giving my word 4 years ago that we would sign to Nuclear Blast, it's now official. For us, it's a big deal to be signing to the biggest indie record company in Europe. One of the main reasons we signed with them is the fact that Marcus Stager, the owner, is a big Exploited fan. I know he will give us 100% backing to make sure the next album is as great as the last ones." So the label will be reissuing several of the band's older albums in March of 2014 with bonus material, which includes repackaging the albums into CD digipacks. Wow, I haven't said that word in a long time. And gatefold vinyl. So there's no word yet on when the new actual record is going to be out from the Exploited. But there you go. Let's talk about digipacks.
Yeah, why is a digipack called a digipack? Because that implies digital pack, but a jewel case is a digital pack as well.
I have a feeling it was like a brand name. It sounds like the kind of thing that would have been a brand name, and then it just like lost its distinction.
Reason for existing.
Yeah, reason for existing.
Wait, the Exploited are going to make a new album.
Just to prove that punk's not dead.
Well, what are they going to sing about?
Punk not being dead.
Sex and violence.
There's no more Margaret Thatcher, man. That well's dry.
This song is about how much we hate Margaret Thatcher. She's dead. We still hate her. The question is, is the Exploited the last of the first wave of punk rockers, or are they the first of the guys that wish it was 1977 when really it was 1980?
Well, the Addicts are still around. Didn't they start like in set around then also?
Addicts are like 77, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, John, I just saw that Leftover Crack is going to be headlining in LA with the Addicts.
Fitting.
Yeah.
Leftover Crack and Addicts.
Yeah. If you want one band from like the original wave of punk rock that gets absolutely no play on punk news, and you know, whatever we have in the past posted anything about them, everyone completely ignores it. It's the Addicts. Like, like if you're into that band, you're into that band. If you're not, they do not exist.
You know why? it's because it's a double. I mean, they're such a gimmicky band, and the gimmick's not even that original. It's like, let's dress like the guys from Clockwork Orange. And that's the gimmick, you know. It's like, so I mean, that gimmick goes nowhere. There's nowhere for that hook to evolve. Also, I have it against the Addicts because I drove like 2 hours to see the Misfits one on the Misfits Addicts tour, and the Addicts felt like playing for like 2.5 hours for some reason. And I went to see the Misfits, and the Misfits only had like a 25-minute set because I had to play for like 2.5 hours. And let me tell you, for the first song, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty cool. Maybe I'll get into the Addicts. And they played the same song again. I'm like, this is pretty cool. All right. 15 minutes goes by, same song. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm feeling it. 30 minutes, I'm like, all right, let's wrap this up. This is pretty good. An hour goes by. I'm like, oh, God, make it stop. 2.5 hours, I'm like, somebody kill me. They played the same song for 150 minutes. Oh, my God. But they had confetti.
Well, that made it all better.
So a digipack is called a digipack because it is a patented thing. Like it's a product that someone holds a patent on. It is an official brand name, although people do use it generically.
Patent's probably expired then because it's probably older than 17 years, right?
When did I first start seeing digipacks? I don't know.
I would say like 98, like the Beastie Boys, Hello Nasty.
Okay.
This might expose my age. What's a digipack?
It's like a one of those paper cases that a CD could go in, where it's kind of like a gatefold vinyl style case, and there's usually a plastic holder for the CD glued into the cardboard.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
What I was like, yeah, in marketing materials, when bands or labels would say like you know, the new album by Rancid, you know, art by Tim Armstrong, produced by Brett Gerowitz, and it comes in a digipack. Like, that's a reason to buy it. It's in a digipack, you know.
Okay, I know what you're talking about now. I just never knew what they were called.
There were some dark years there. We didn't quite know what we were doing.
The dark 90s.
We were just buying shit.
Yeah, the music industry will last forever. All bands will always make millions and millions of dollars, you know?
What's this internet thing?
Well,
CDs, hey. All right. So
I still love CDs. CDs are still my favorite format. I don't care what anybody says.
Mine are in a pile. It's an orderly pile, but it is a pile. So that's something. Not in the garbage. So yeah, okay. Do we have another song? Anything else to talk about? Joel, you got anything you want to plug?
The Ex-Friends record, Rules for Making Out Words. It's our first full length. It's coming out on Paper and Plastic in March on vinyl. It's already been out digitally for a while, and Creep Records just put out the CD, so that's out there too. Excited about it. Excited to make some more records. That's about it.
Is it in a
digipack? Joel, is punk dead, or was the who is right, Crass or the Exploited? Is punk dead, or is punk not dead?
Oh man, you're gonna make me do this?
Yeah.
It's whatever Crass said, because they were a lot smarter. I mean, it's not even a contest.
So Joel says punk is dead. Ricky, last word to you before you take us out. Ricky, is punk dead, or is punk not dead?
No, you just got to look for it. You just have to look for it a little bit harder than you used to.
So the Exploited were right and Crass was wrong. That's your position.
Yeah, there's got to be a way they can both be wrong.
Ricky, what tune you got for us?
So I have a band from an LA folk punk, like local band. They're called the Manx. They're pretty unorthodox when it comes to their instruments. They have an accordion player, a banjo player, upright bassist, and a mandolin player. And they recently added a drummer. You can check them out on their Bandcamp page, themanx.bandcamp.com. And they just released an EP called Blood Chronicles last year. And the song I have is called Blood Gold. It's really good for not having any guitars or anything like that. And yeah, just check them out. It's spelled MANX, and they have a Facebook page too.
All right. Well, this is The Manx.
Oh,
All right, that's our show for this week. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at podcast@punknews.org. As usual, we have to remind you that the things that are said on this show are the utterances of the people who uttered them and do not necessarily reflect the actual punknews.org entity, whatever that may be. Thanks to Joel from Apply United and X-Friends for joining us on the show. Thanks, Joel.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. It was a lot of fun.
And thank you, Ricky, for joining us tonight, and to John. And I think that's it. So we'll see you guys next week.